You're listening to the Ideal Business Show with Pat Rigsby. This is the place where fitness entrepreneurs come to learn how to earn more income, have more impact, and enjoy more freedom. Now, here's your host, Pat Rigsby.
Pat Rigsby here again with another episode of the Ideal Business Show. And today's episode, I have my good friend and mastermind member, Doug Sperling. Doug is the owner of Sperling Fitness and has really done some incredible things in a pretty short period of time. I mean, Doug's one of the younger members of our mastermind group and not even yet 30 years old. He's built a powerhouse business, just kind of moving into this next stage of life where he assumed to be dad and just recently married. And so it's been fun to watch him really build a sound infrastructure that I would say is, man, not unlike what I hear a lot of people say their ideal business would be. And he's done it at a time that, really sets the stage for him to do a lot of cool things moving forward. So I thought this would be a great opportunity to, share his story and some insights and things that I know that he shares that our mastermind members enjoy so that, you guys can reap some of the benefits that the things that he's learned along the way and apply in your own business. So welcome, Doug.
Thanks for having me, Pat. Looking forward to it.
So, Doug, let's get a little bit of the background here. Let's talk about how you got started as a fitness business owner.
Sure. So I started, actually, I'll keep it short, but I'll go way back to when I was 14, which for me is only 14 years ago. I got introduced to the health and fitness field working in a hospital, actually as a physical therapy aide. That was my first job at 14 in high school. Worked as a physical therapy aide, then transitioned into the nursing home world and actually worked with Alzheimer's and dementia patients in high school, later half of high school, and into the summers of college. Went to college here in Maine, and one of my college professors has really become one of my mentors, and he kind of introduced me to the fitness world. I have a good personal story with weight loss. I was in high school pushing 400 pounds. I was 300, and I think my highest was 386 pounds. And in between the high school and college transition, was able to drop what ended up being well over 100 pounds going into college. And then my mentor at the university kind of introduced me to the fitness world, worked in a commercial gym throughout college as starting at front desk and then obviously doing the standard. Once I got my certification, the standard personal training, and up here in Maine, I'm sure we'll talk about it more later. One of the interesting things is competition is really not there's two gyms in our town in addition to ours, and competition is really not a direct concern geographic-wise. A lot of people drive a good amount of distance up here to come to a facility. But anyways, I realized that as I was getting ready to graduate, I always had an interest in business. My mom was an accountant, so kind of got that background. But the southern Maine area really didn't have any training gyms. It was simply commercial gyms and kind of mom-and-pop health clubs. And luckily, was pretty fortunate to, start to get introduced to your stuff and was involved in a lot of your groups. And really realized that, a lot of gyms in Maine weren't helping people. They were just, renting them equipment. And so I did a small Division III collegiate internship after graduating college. And that right away told me that the private sector is where I want to be. So I decided to jump right in and rented a way in the middle of nowhere warehouse and started from zero clients and built it from there.
So, that's pretty impressive and a lot of stuff in a short period of time. So why don't we do this? Why don't we talk about, you say, hey, I built it from there. Let's talk about where you are today, and then we'll kind of backtrack and talk about that process about, how you've gotten from that initial stage in that warehouse to, the successful business that you own now.
Sure. So I was fortunate enough 2 years ago to buy the building that we're in. So we have 6,500 square feet, as well as we're on a 2-acre lot. So we have a good amount of outdoor space that we utilize, parking lot, as well as a fenced in backyard. And so I was super fortunate enough to find this building on the market 2 years ago and purchased it. But currently, we are just about, I'm hoping by the time this is actually put out there, at 300. We're just shy of 300 clients. We have 7 staff members, team members, including myself. So there's myself, I have 1 admin, and then 5 full-time coaches that do all of the training.
Nice. So obviously, you know, there's a gap that you've had to cross or a journey that you've had to take, maybe a better way to put it. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about how you've gone from that startup to where you are today.
So when I first started, it was just me, you know, the standard wake up at 4:30 in the morning to open the doors at 5 a.m. and would do all of the sessions. I had a college friend that was kind of in between careers, and he's in the Navy, and he wasn't a certified personal trainer, but he would kind of hang out in the gym and help me. We didn't really have too much traffic flow issues to worry about back then, but, you know, kind of man the front desk and fill in here and there if I had to run out. But it was just me for the first 6 months or so doing all the sessions. We started actually, you know, I was 21 years old when I started it, so I had no clue what I was doing. So we kind of started, you know, really trying to please everybody, which I think is one of my first lessons is to, you're never going to please everybody. And we've created a really, really good niche within our 300 clients. We're currently like over 85% middle-aged moms, female, but we started with, you know, basically if you were going to give us your credit card, we were going to help you. And that was, you know, long-term, it created a little bit of a headache because we didn't really have a brand identity in our community. We would work with athletes. We would work with the highly injured. We would work with obviously the general population. But as we started, you know, I think that as much as it was a learning experience, I also think it was good because it kind of taught me, and then I'll get into how we kind of grew the staff, taught me what we really enjoyed working with. I thought it was going to be more of an athletic population, and we still train like athletes, right? Like I think sometimes in our kind of training gym worlds, we forget that we still train like athletes. Like we slam med balls, we push sleds, we swing kettlebells. So we still have that kind of philosophy, but we now work primarily with kind of the mom. But we started working with everybody, and really a lot of just kind of guerrilla marketing. We used to be closed during the middle of the day, and during the middle of the day, I would just go around printing out flyers and dropping them on windshields and knocking on doors, trying to set up some joint ventures, and really just kind of the grassroots guerrilla marketing. I was super fortunate. The university that I graduated from is just the next town over. And so pretty much since day one, we've had a really, really strong internship program. And so what has become one of my good friends was our first intern. He is actually now the director of our facility and kind of runs the operations for me. But he started as an intern. So if I go back to that first year, it was pretty much me. I started in January through to about that fall. Finally, in that fall, he took an internship with us, which was pretty much at that point, pretty much just helped me. You know, I didn't have a structured internship program like I have now. He volunteered, did the internship. As the internship was wrapping up, he, you know, wanted to stay around. I wasn't able to afford him. We were able to grow a little bit more till finally it was just me and him, and he would run half the day. I would run the other half of the day. Stayed really, really grassroots with that guerrilla marketing. We had a lot of good, successful joint ventures early on with, you know, the local chiropractor, the local coffee shop, the local massage therapist. So I think nowadays with, you know, the whole Facebook advertising and stuff like that, sure, we do that, but we can't forget about some of those kind of more guerrilla style marketing, because that's really what took us off in the early years. So as we started rolling into years 2 and 3, we started really getting a solid internship program. So we had 3 or 4 interns every semester. And at some point in the early, you know, probably let's call it now we're in year 2, it was actually too much because we didn't have a lot of structure behind it. But again, I think a lot of that you kind of learn as you go. And so we continued to grow in clientele, really started niching in probably in year 3 to the more what is commonly, you know, the semi-private small group model. Before that, we were doing classes. We were doing, you know, pretty much anything that people wanted. We used to offer, you know, nothing that I would recommend nowadays, but like TRX specific classes and kettlebell specific classes, and really just selling the equipment and not the actual result. So a lot thanks to your guidance and more. We niched really, really hard in probably year 3. By then, it was myself, Josh, and 1 other coach who's still with me. And so by then, there was 3 of us. And that's when I really, really started having the ability. I had Trent, who was that third guy, work in the morning. Josh would work in the evening. And that really allowed me to step slightly away from the business for even an hour a day to work on systems. I think that is what shot us forward. Was Pat knows I am super analytical, super type A, very process driven. And in some sectors of our business, such as creative client experience and engagement, where I look to others on the team, but I really early on leveraged systems. So we created a system for everything from how to answer the phone to, you know, how to handle a session to how to greet to somebody, everything. And it's now to the point where, you know, as we bring on a team member, most of them are former interns of ours. We have a really solid internship curriculum. We have a really solid staff onboarding. And our back end, I always say our back end runs like a franchise. You know, you always hear the common example of a Starbucks or something like that. If you get a Starbucks in Maine and you get a Starbucks in Louisville, it's the same coffee. They make it the same way. And so although I have no goals of that, I do try to run it like that just because we call it the Sperling way with our business. The Sperling way, it's we all have agreed to it, but this is the way we're going to do things. And now with a team of seven, it's even super, you know, more important for having these clear systems. So as we continued to grow, I just kept dialing in the systems and slowly stepping away from the training and working more on the business instead of getting stuck in it. So that was really when I saw the large growth, was when I was fully able to, you know, we went from 150 to 250 clients, which seemed like overnight, when I basically removed myself from the training floor and worked purely on the business. And now it's more of that strategic chipping away growth as we, you know, step over this 300 client boundary. But systems is really, I think, systems and then that grassroots guerrilla marketing is really what got us to where we are today.
So let's talk about some of that now, because I obviously, you know, I want to make this as practical as possible. So let's talk about systems first. And then we'll spend a few minutes about the guerrilla marketing. If you were going to give somebody three tips about integrating systems more effectively into their business, or documenting systems, or just, I guess, making that a driver in their business success, what would you suggest?
Sure. So I think the best way to think about it is to take a blank piece of paper and write down, you know, Pat's term, the ideal business, write down the ideal journey of your, you know, your textbook client, your target client, write down their journey step by step from the time they inquire all the way through the, you know, first day, whether you do a success session or however you want to onboard them, to, you know, their training experience, their first 30 days, their first 90 days, all the way through to then if they choose to leave you, what happens. Write that down, what you want that to be. So then you break that down into sub headlines. So, okay, so first step is obviously going to be lead inquiry. So how are you going to track your leads? Do you have a lead tracker that automatically when a lead comes in, your admin or you plugs right into the lead tracker, and there's a status note right next to their name? We use a lot of color coding on our, we use just a basic Excel spreadsheet. I don't think we need to complicate this more with softwares or anything like that. We use a basic Excel spreadsheet with their name and the status of, do they have a success session booked, yes or no? But this client life cycle, I think, is where I would recommend starting. If you can take, okay, that lead inquiry, and then that's my first, what's going to happen step by step by step? Then, okay, they're here for their first success session, let's call it. They're being onboarded. What are the steps for a success session? Then you have your membership sales. So if you kind of reverse engineer kind of the whole journey and step by step break each category down, and it's simply, I think, just taking the time to document it as you're doing it. Like, I'm all for the understanding of you're not going to be able to delegate everything right off the bat. So you have to, you know, carry around a notebook, whatever it is, where you, as you're doing something, writing it down. If you do have an admin, our first admin, she has gone off to nursing school, but our first admin, what I had her do was anytime she did something that we didn't have a system for, she would just open up a Word document and document everything that she did step by step by step. You know, the analogy of how do you make a peanut butter and jelly? Don't skip opening up the jar, just like you don't skip, you know, how to sell a membership or how to greet somebody. So document it all. And then we like to put everything on a cloud base. We use Google Drive. Everything's on Google Drive. Each system has its own document. We call it play sheets. So if you think of the, you know, the football playbook, you can type into our Google Drive any play, let's call it. So how to answer the phone, whatever. And there's a one-page system of how to do that. So that's the ease of it. But if I were to kind of summarize, I would say start with that client lifecycle checklist. That, I think, is our most important document. We have it now condensed to, I believe it's down to 3 pages. So it doesn't have to be this big daunting task. I think people hear like policies and procedures and they think of this big like 100-page manual, when in reality, if you can just start by getting your client experience super consistent, your clients really, like, of course, they want a really good experience, but they want it to be consistent. They want it to be when they show up with, you know, Coach A on Monday, it's a similar repeatable experience on Wednesday with Coach B. So in order to do that, think of that journey, think of that life cycle, and take each of those, the lead inquiry, the success session, what's their first day like, what's the session itself look like, how long is it, et cetera, and just document it and then start implementing it.
Okay. Very cool. And, you know, I think that's probably a great place to start, because I know so many people get overwhelmed unnecessarily when it comes to thinking about systems. So, no, that's terrific. So let's shift gears and let's talk about more of the guerrilla marketing. I mean, we all know how popular Facebook marketing has become, and so many people see that as the driver of their business. And no doubt it's valuable, but it's not the only way to grow your business. But beyond that, I think everybody's dependence on that has created an opportunity if you focus on some other areas. So I'm excited to hear what you have to say about kind of this approach to guerrilla marketing.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like you said, we do, you know, a solid amount of Facebook advertising and it works. But, you know, and I can't really say to maybe a larger population, but we're in a town where if I go to the grocery store, it takes me 3 hours to shop for groceries because I see all of my clients there. Our town is 12,000 people. So, you know, the Facebook advertising works, but you need to make sure that the other stuff is all, like, I think Facebook advertising works if you have a strong message first and a strong brand identity first. If you're just putting out cold ads, they're never going to, you know, the whole know, like, and trust. Like, they have to do that before they even, I think we sometimes forget how much it takes, especially for our clientele, the people who are intimidated by the typical gym, the people that are, you know, they walk into a gym and they have no clue what to do. If that's your clientele, don't forget how hard it is for them to hit a submit button on a lead ad or anything like that, because that's admitting that they need help. And that's a giant hurdle that you have to get over. And so if you back up from that, it really starts by, I think, having a super strong message about who you are, what makes you different, and what you're kind of stand for, like your whole values. And then you can look at, okay, what channels are you then going to deliver that through? Facebook advertising is only just one particular channel. And nowadays we do spend time on the digital channel, but I don't think we need to, you know, push aside more of that guerrilla, or let's call it grassroots marketing. So, you know, literally walking down the street to your local coffee shop and saying, hey, I'm Doug. Nice to meet you. Here's what we do. A lot of our clients, you know, have coffee here after their workout, after they drop their kids off from school. I'd love to give you more business. Can you tell me a little bit more about, you know, what you guys do and what you stand for? So I think going into those small businesses, think of your target market and where else do they hang out? Sure, they hang out on Facebook, but they also hang out at the coffee shop. They also probably go to, you know, some type of restaurant in town frequently. They have their hangout spots, the schools, the banks. I mean, we've just been able to, and this is mostly talking joint ventures here, set up an incredible relationship by simply thinking of who our target market is, where do they hang out outside of the hours that they're not with us, and then going to those places and saying, hey, how can I help you? More of that asking for advice, or how can I help you first? And then that law of reciprocity starts saying, well, okay, you just sent, you know, 10 ladies just walked in yesterday and bought coffee and they happen to be clients of yours. So how can I give you business? So then you set up something, and it doesn't mean anything formal. Like, we have one like formal joint venture with a bank where they receive a discounted rate to come to our facility. The rest of them are just simply relationships. Like, we don't have anything formal with the barbershop or the coffee shop or the chiropractor. It's nothing formal, but if somebody's there getting, you know, salons or another one, if somebody's there getting their haircut and they're like, oh, you look great, by the way, where do you go? Right away, it's, oh, boom, they go to Sperling. So having that reputation in your town where you are the authority, you are the go-to, sure, that's backed up by digital. But I think you can leverage that, kind of put it under a turbo if you have the more of the local, you know, the small business brand authority with the joint ventures and referrals, all of that stuff is really tied together. Charity workouts, they're all, I think they start, like we just did a charity workout for the American Diabetes Association and a local bike race that fundraises that. And you have other businesses in town that are promoting our charity workout because of the relationships that we've set up with them over the last couple of years. A Facebook ad is not going to increase that attendance. It's going to be the other businesses pushing that. So I think if I could solidify that with a tip, it would be get off your butt, get out from behind a computer, from the keyboard, and go introduce yourself to the other small businesses in your town.
So, you know, I think you've shared some really valuable insight here and, you know, the little bit of time we've had together. Do you have any other tips? I mean, obviously you've accomplished so much of this pretty early stage. And I think you've built a great business that allows you some flexibility where you're not, you know, an on the floor coach by choice for the bulk of the time. And you're really kind of shifted into that owner entrepreneurial role. I mean, do you have any more tips or advice for somebody who would like to kind of evolve their role in their business and accelerate their progress as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I think where my mind goes right away with that question is, you know, you have to know where you're going. I think I have gotten to where I am today because I have really, really, really clear goals and vision where I want to go as Doug Sperling, not even as Sperling Fitness. I think it starts with you. Like, what are your values? What's important to you? Like, I know, as you know, Pat mentioned, my wife is pregnant and we have a baby coming in August. I want to be around for that kind of stuff. I don't want to be working 14 hours a day at the gym. So I've, since I was 21, known that and said, okay, what does the business have to look like in order for that to happen? So a lot of it is starting with your values, starting with your vision. What does you, I really resonate with the whole ideal business. What does that look like? Like 5 years from now, what does success look like? And saying, okay, what do I want my role to be? So, okay, if I want my role to be not involved in coaching, how many clients do I need to hire another coach? Do I have the systems in place to hire another coach? Maybe I need to hire an admin. Like, what does that look like? What's the dollar amount associated with that? And really taking a step back and saying, okay, what is my ideal business? What's my ideal role? And then reverse engineer what needs to happen in order for that to happen. So how many coaches do I need to have? Like, it's not a coincidence that we have 5 coaches and 1 admin. Like, that's been the goal for since year 3 when I really started dialing this stuff in. It's no coincidence that we're at 300 clients. Like, it's reverse engineering. Just like you spend time reverse engineering, okay, how many clicks do I need to get on this ad in order to get X number of leads? Reverse engineer your life and say, okay, at 40, where do I want to be? What's my day-to-day look like? Like, what's my ideal day? Write down, what do I want to do from when I wake up? You know, all that stuff I think is so important, because then you can get into the tactical, like, okay, so if I want to be home, working from home, what does the business itself need to look like? How many clients do I need? How many coaches do I need, et cetera? And then that turns into, okay, how many leads do I need? And you get more into the tactical stuff. But I think a lot of people are so caught up in the day-to-day grind of just, you know, working in the business. Like, that saying can sometimes be overused, like working in the business versus on the business. And I get that, but I do think it has some merit where if you are so caught up working in the business day to day, you have to find a little bit of wiggle room, just starting with pulling out that pad of paper and saying, what is my ideal business? Where do I want to go? And then chipping away by reverse engineering what that looks like.
Awesome. So Doug, I mean, I know that you are not only, you know, operating Sperling Fitness, but you are starting to share some of your thoughts and insights, you know, with other entrepreneurs. So if somebody wanted to learn more from you, learn more about you, where would they go?
So I would say Facebook, in the sense of connecting. I love connecting with people. I think that's one of the great things about Facebook. So just, you know, find me on Facebook, Doug Sperling, type it right in, pop it right up. I do run a personal blog at dsperling.com. And then if you're in Pat's virtual fitness mastermind, which if you're not, you should be, I'm usually in there once a week putting something, some type of lesson that happened that week, whether it's, you know, meeting a staff member, or I did an outline for that client lifecycle checklist in there. So you can find me in Virtual Fitness Mastermind as well.
Well, man, that's awesome. I appreciate you taking the time to share some of this stuff. I know obviously it's kind of a busy time, exciting time for you. So the, you know, wisdom that you shared here was great. And thank you. And thank you to all the people listening in to this episode of the Ideal Business Show. So this is Pat and Doug signing off.
Thanks for listening. We've got a special gift for our listeners. We're giving away 52 cut and paste newsletters that you could start using for your fitness business today. To get your special gift, head on over to patrigsby.com/gift.